Steviana Plummer is an adventurer and writer, a former Cook County resident, and now living in Patagonia. She recently completed a journey she calls Patagon, a 1,000-mile trip across Patagonia on horseback, her only companion, her trusty dog, Darcy. Stevie wanted to experience the kind of slow travel that's rare these days, and through the magic of modern technology, she now joins us from the Southern Hemisphere. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Stevie Plummer.
Thank you so much, Dave. Thanks for having me.
All right, Stevie. So, used to live in Cook County. Lots of folks, I bet, familiar with you. Lots of followers on Facebook. And a huge accomplishment here. Congratulations on successfully traversing the country of Patagonia. 1,000 miles. You had some interesting numbers at work. 2 feet, 4 paws, 8 hoofs, and 1,000 miles. Tell us about Patagon.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it's weird to hear it out loud. I think I just arrived back home in Bariloche, Patagonia, Argentina, last night, and it still has yet to sunk in that I've actually finished the trip. But thank you. And yeah, no, it was a really nice trip. Difficult, but I loved it. And talking numbers, yeah, it was 2 feet. Which, mine. And then Darcy, my dog, 4 paws, my 2 horses. And then we actually ended up doing 1,150 miles at the end, just because following along the mountains kind of causes you to not go in the straightest of lines. But yeah, thank you.
Yes. Well, what inspired you to take this trip? What is your mission? What did you set off to accomplish?
Yeah, when I moved to Argentina almost 4 years ago, I immediately fell in love with the gaucho horse culture. And I was born in Texas, so I'd been around horses before, but never to the extent of how the gauchos live, you know, in the mountains, solo. And just, yeah, I just fell in love with this culture. So anyways, and just the country itself. So I moved 3 months after my first initial trip to Patagonia 4 years ago. I moved 3 months after that and then became a resident and started working at a ranch here, guiding pack trips into the mountains with a local gaucha, actually. And after seeing more of the backcountry, I wanted to see more than what I had been doing here in Bariloche. And so I decided that I would do this traverse along the Andes Mountains down to the south to get to know Patagonia.
Well, and it sounds like it was just not just any local gaucho that you connected with. Talk about your local guide and the inspiration that you found.
Yeah, so the local gaucha that I work with, her grandfather had come down from Texas, and he rode his horse down from Buenos Aires, Argentina, which is more than 1,000 miles to the north of Bariloche. And they settled the first ranch in Bariloche, which now is a major, major city in Patagonia. But the history of their family is really interesting because they were also from Texas and were friends with Butch Cassidy and Sundance, who ran in this neck of the woods for a few years. And so they have this really interesting history tied with Texas and bandits and Patagonia. And so, yeah, part of my trail actually took me through their old hideouts of Butch Cassidy and Sundance in the south. And I don't know, just getting to discover these little bits of this rich history that Patagonia holds is a really special part of this trip. It was really nice to get to experience that and meet some of the people that were tied to those stories.
Sure. And so, Stevie, your 2 horses, I'd like you to talk about sort of the breed of the horse and then the names. Did you get to name them? Talk about your traveling companions, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So they had names whenever I had bought them, but neither one of them suited their character. So I changed their names actually to Sundance from Butch Cassidy and Sundance, and the other Bandido, which is Spanish for bandit. And their breed is Criollo, is how you say it in Argentina. And the Criollo breed were kind of the Mustangs of the South, if you will. And so they're just a really hardy, great mountain horse. They can forage and live off the land. I didn't have to haul food with me because I traveled close to the mountains, and both of them ended the trip fatter than when I left. They're just awesome horses.
Okay, so 1,000 miles, no real route to speak of in terms of a, you know, you weren't working off of an established trail or a path. You sort of made your own path, it looks like. And how long did it take to prepare for this? And compare that to how long did it take to complete the journey?
Absolutely. It was about 1.5 years of preparation, just getting the horses and talking with the people, trying to figure out gear for a long-term basis. I mean, gear works, but every single day for 3 months, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day is a different story. So just really testing gear and stuff like that for long-term. And then the route, it's you can't really plan it out. I mean, you can have an idea of where you'd like to go, but most of Patagonia, it limits you because it's such a kind of drastic place that it really limits your path to the pre-Cordillera is what they call it. It's like the pre-Andes, where rivers run and you can find grass because everything else falls off into like the pampas. It's completely dry or massive, massive Andes mountains that you can't take horses across. So the route really depended on the ranches that lie in these areas. And so I would go passing through the ranches, talking with the local gauchos, asking them where I could pass through the mountains where they all have sheep and cows way out and they know the trail. So your path, you can't really plan for. You just have to go and hope that someone's there to ask every week or so to have an idea, but which makes it exciting in a way.
So you were alone. You had your trusty companion, Darcy, and it would appear she came through marvelously despite some setbacks. Talk about the relationship you had with your dog, Darcy, on the trail.
Yeah, absolutely. And Darcy actually, she was a Grand Marais resident there for a while as well. but yeah, she's been traveling with me for 5 years, and no, she was great on the trail. She's bummed out. We got back last night and she's kind of pissed off that we're not saddling up right now, you know, kind of wondering what's going on, but no, she had a blast. It was tricky at the beginning because I used to let her chase rabbits out at the ranch and she would just arrive to camp totally destroyed and sore paws and everything else. And so there was a little bit of a challenge at the beginning of the ride trying to train her not to chase rabbits. But after we got that under control, it was awesome. She just, yeah, she totally loved every bit of it. She was a great companion.
Well, Stevie, you put together a really beautiful blog online, and we'll encourage folks to check this out. We'll, of course, put some links through with the interview. But if you could just sort of take us inside of the, I think, a lot of anxiety and worry at the beginning of the trip, and what were some of the hardest parts of the trip? They seem to occur early on.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of fear and anxiety because the longest trips I had done in the past were with people and maybe up to a week. So this was a huge undertaking. And then just a lot of the exterior pressure from social media and everything, because when you do make it a big deal, there's a huge pressure to of course, finish it. And I didn't want to, yeah, I was just worried if anything happened to my animals, you know, that, yeah, the trip would end. I wouldn't push them harder than I would push myself. And so, yeah, there was a lot of fear of just the unknown, but once I got started, I think the hardest part was just falling into this kind of rhythm of slowness. You really struggle with the world today. Everything is so quick, but there in the ranches and being on the trail, it's super slow. And I would go 6 days without seeing, you know, another person. And that was a struggle for about the first month. And then you fall into that rhythm. And now I think the hardest part of the trip is going to be now, you know, trying to readjust to real life.
Yeah, culture shock, no doubt. We're talking with Stevie Anna Plummer, a former Cook County resident and adventurer, writer, blogger, must be a photographer as well, Stevie. Amazing photos on your blog. And
thanks.
Talk about the technology that you were able to take with you on this over 1,000 mile horseback journey across Patagonia in just 3 short months. But you were able to blog on the way. You must have had some fancy gear.
Yeah. You can't imagine what the gauchos thought of my solar panels, but yeah, I had a small set of solar panels, a battery pack. I took my computer, my phone, and my camera. And so I would work from my tent mostly. And then when I would hit a place that had Wi-Fi about once a month, I would either send the stuff back to my partner, who would then upload things throughout my ride, so it wasn't completely dormant. But then, yeah, I would just blog when I could. But in the south, it was there weren't so many towns. The last month, I think I crossed 2 towns.
But you met many fine folks on the way. What were some of the outstanding memories, some of the best folks you met, and just kind of take us around that fire ring? And then next we'll talk about mate.
Oh, nice. I'm drinking some right now.
Well, I thought I would offer you.
My style's been offering pretty well.
I thought we could do like a symbolic offering.
Sorry?
I thought we'd have a symbolic offering of mate at the beginning of this interview. It seems appropriate that you're drinking it now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my afternoon delight for sure. No, some of the people that I met on the trail, it's really hard to narrow it down because honestly, the best part of this trip, and I've said this during the whole ride, were the people that I've met. Just unbelievable. The people in the countryside that just are there waiting to help you for, you know, with what they can. And people don't have, you know, much out there, but they know horses and they know dogs and animals and they know, you know, how to take care of you. And no, that was the biggest thing for me. I stayed at, it's called Estancia Numancia, and I stayed there with a lovely family, the Perez family, working with sheep and cows for about a week. And that was one of my fondest memories of the trip spent with people there, just to see not just a working ranch, but a ranch that functions off of sustainability in a place like Patagonia. And where the two owners of the ranch, the two brothers, were up before any of the workers, drinking mate and ready to head out. And we'd saddle up at 3:30 in the morning. And now it was just a really great experience.
Well, you've got some great descriptions of mate and its importance in the culture. What is mate, and how do gauchos drink mate?
Sure. So it's a drink usually that's drunk with more than one person. It's kind of a communal drink. And mate is a loose leaf tea. It's almost kind of like a green tea, but it's this loose leaf tea. It's poured into a gourd. And then you have the bombilla, which is a metal straw. And you pour hot water over the tea and you drink through the straw, and it kind of filters out the tea leaves. And there's a cebador, who is the server of the mate. It's one person that serves the mate, and he serves pours the water and serves each person one at a time. You drink the mate until it's done and you pass it around kind of in a circle. So it's really a good excuse to just sit down and chat and enjoy the company around you. And there's lots of time on the ranches to pass time, you know, sitting in grass and drinking mate. So it's a nice tradition.
Yeah, I love it how you describe it as the opposite of television.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a great, exactly. Yeah, forces folks to interact and socialize and sort of a true roots of the country. Patagonia, you also mentioned, is one of the last untouched places on Earth. Why is that? And do you hope that it'll stay that way?
Yeah, I do. It's really, really wild. You drive across the states and no matter where you go, it seems like there's fences and people, and you can find those places of wilderness for sure. But I think on this big of an extent, it's just the development of even the little towns here. It's like stepping back in time. It's phenomenal. There's just, like I said, there's really no way to explain it, but it's just whole bunch of wide open spaces with nobody.
Yes. Well, it's nice to know there's that out there in the big world. It's a big world. You've seen a lot of it. And what type of background gave you the most confidence? What were some of your toughest moments and what got you through those?
One of my toughest moments on the ride, that is.
Yes.
I was crossing a big mesa. It was a 3-day crossing of a big mesa. And the winds here, they will, I don't know if you know anything about Patagonia. Usually people talk about either mate or the wind, but the winds down here are really, really intense. And there were days that I was crossing this mesa and the horses physically couldn't walk. It would just knock us down. And so those are tough moments. And then my horses on the side of the mountain, coming down off of the same mesa, fell into a super, super heavy, here they call it menuco, but it's like a very, very heavy sand clay, up to their shoulders, and almost couldn't get out. And I had to take off all of the pack saddle, all the saddle, and all the gear on the side of the mountain, and basically send the horses out on their own to get out because, they almost got buried in that. And that was probably one of the scariest moments I had on the trip. But really everything else went pretty smooth. I was really happy that nothing else really happened too bad.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you're, especially with Darcy and all that preliminary concern. Now you mentioned she had some issues with paws, some grasses getting into her paws. What kind of techniques did you guys use to keep her healthy?
Everything is like this live and learn. Once you know how to prepare, once you know what to watch out for, it's completely controllable. But yeah, she was having a really tough time with these little tiny grasses that would get wedged in her toes, and they're similar to like what a kind of a porcupine quill does, and it works its way up into the toe, and embeds itself, and you have to cut it open and take it out if you don't see them. And her fur is so tough. I had to check her 10 times a day to get all these little tiny grasses out, because if you missed it for a day, it was already embedded. It was really tricky. So there was a time that I stopped on the trail for about a week to let her recover from that. And then after that was completely manageable, but it was tricky for sure. But like I said, it's all things that you learn with time to watch out for and to avoid.
Well, you took care of Darcy, and she certainly took care of you and her company and companionship. Stevie, Anna Plummer just completed Patagon, a 1,000-plus-mile trip across Patagonia on horseback with a trusty dog. Darcy, Stevie, what's next for you?
That's a good question. No, I've been thinking the whole time on the trail where I'm gonna go next, and I don't know. There's a few ideas. I just have to decide which one first. But I have no idea. Something to do with horses for sure.
All right, and final question. Favorite piece of gear, most essential piece of gear you found on the trip?
That's gotta be my GPS.
Of course, in the land without trails and maps, that's great that that modern technology helps.
Absolutely. That helped a lot, a lot.
It looks like you had some sponsors as well, Stevie. You want to thank them?
My main sponsor is Darn Tough, and then of course our sponsor Guayaki for all of our yerba mate that we drank on the trail.
Yes. Nice. Well, Stevie Anna Plummer can be found online at Stevie Anna, that's STEVIEANNA.com. Wonderful blog photography from the far off land of Patagonia. It just looks like a dream world, Stevie. I'm so inspired by your trip. Congratulations on the success. And thanks so much for joining us here on the Roadhouse.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Dave.